A new push is underway to pressure financial institutions in the global south to enforce sanctions against Russia. Having failed to quickly crush the Russian economy, U.S. officials are now intensifying their focus on banks outside of the West in a campaign to force them to enforce sanctions imposed not by their own governments, but by Washington.
We need a new system. We need a new society. We need to demand that which may have sounded impossible even a few weeks ago, but is not only realizable, but an imperative necessity.
We are very excited to have Professor Richard Wolff join us for a regular weekly segment where we discuss the biggest stories relating to the economy, the state of the working class, and the crimes of big business. I'm Walter Smolarek, filling in for Brian Becker. The Socialist Program brings you content several days a week thanks to the support of our patrons at patreon.com/thesocialistprogram. We appreciate all of your support and encourage you to become a patron today if you enjoy listening to the show. Richard Wolff is the co-founder of the organization Democracy at Work and the author of many books, the latest being The Sickness is the System, When Capitalism Fails to Save Us from Pandemics or Itself. You can check out all of his work at rdwolff.com. Well, Professor Wolff, let's spend today's episode talking about sanctions. There's a very interesting, illuminating article in the Wall Street Journal. It's titled, Russia's Backdoor to the Global Banking System is Slamming Shut. It's kind of a triumphalist headline, but essentially this article is about, well, essentially to sort of give the whole context, you know, the fact that the United States expected Russia's economy to buckle, to collapse, essentially, very quickly following the imposition of wide-ranging sanctions following the beginning of the war in Ukraine. That did not happen. They were able to trade with countries in the global south, in Asia, Africa, Latin America. Their banking system has similarly not collapsed. But now this article is reporting that there's a concerted effort underway by U.S. officials to pressure those financial institutions, particularly in the United Arab Emirates and in Turkey, that have been facilitating Russian purchases on the global market, to stop that, to essentially enforce the sanctions imposed by the U.S. Treasury Department, imposed by the Biden administration. This says a lot. There's a lot of different facets here. But I mean, first of all, let me just ask you, what does this say about the nature of sanctions? I mean, when we're talking about sanctions, we're not just talking about a policy that the U.S. government imposes on its own citizens, on its own corporations, correct?
No, it varies. The sanctions are a malleable thing. You can make them harsher or less harsh. You can make them global. You can make them regional. You can focus on a particular industry. There's lots of ways of doing it. There's a number of things to be said here. Number one, levying sanctions is having the government massively intervene in the economy. I want to stress to people what an ideological sea change this is. All of that libertarian stuff about how that government is best which governs least, or the government only messes things up, or the government should never pick winners and losers. It should rather be market competition that makes that decision. Otherwise, it's political favoritism rather than efficiency which decides. All of those statements repeated endlessly in the academic field of economics, which I have been working in all my life, and by countless politicians and in countless media, all of that's out the window. The government is stepping in. And let me be real clear, a sanction is the government telling a private business who they can do business with. The United States government was going to tell the Russians who you can do business with. But of course, they also are telling the people the Russians do the business with that their dealings with Russia now have to stop. These businesses are angry. This is very important for Americans to understand. All businesses that have the government intervene and cut them off from a well-paying customer, which is what Russia was for countless banks, among other businesses, they're not happy about it. Their profits are suffering. Their business is suffering. And keep in mind that they really find it bizarre. Their own government, in many cases, does not tell them what to do, but the United States government, a separate country that has no jurisdiction over them, is telling them. And basically behind telling them is the threat that if you continue to do business with Russia, you bank located, I don't know, in Indonesia, or you bank located in Mexico, well, then the American government will feel free to start sanctioning you directly because you do business with somebody else we have sanctioned. This is governmental interference in the economic system big time, beyond what the government does to tax, beyond what the government does to spend money, and beyond what the government does to levy rules and regulations of business. You now have a direct intervention telling a business who you can and cannot do business with. And it is resented bitterly. And now the important inference that flows from this. Those businesses have every incentive to evade, avoid, nullify the American sanction program because it's costing them money. They don't have to be evilly intended. They don't even have to like Russia for that matter. They don't want to lose profitable business, which is what their dealings with Russia were. And then the final kicker, Russia can tell them, and even if the Russians don't tell them, they know it anyway, that if you do what the United States tells you to do, and you don't do business with us, and then maybe, I don't know, in November, Mr. Trump wins the election, which he may, and then reverses the policies, which he said he's going to do. He's not going to sanction Russia. He's not going to participate in the Ukraine war. Then all these sanctions will be lifted. And then the Russians will say to the bank in Indonesia or the bank in Mexico, you played ball with the United States. We're going to take our business somewhere else. So these banks don't want to do it. And guess what? If Russia doesn't want the sanction to succeed, and if the local banks who suffer these sanctions don't want them to succeed, I make you a prediction. They're not going to succeed. Between what the Russians can do and what these banks can do, they will find a workaround. You know how I know they will? Because the sanctions that were levied by the United States over the last 2 years against Russia have all been one huge failure. They didn't mean Russia stopped functioning. They didn't, as they were promised to, quote, bring Russia to its knees. They did not collapse the ruble. None of it. The sanctions didn't achieve what they were set out to do. And that has not slowed the United States down over the last 2 years. It increased those sanctions. It spread them to more entities. And now we hear they're going to do even more against banks. There is no reason to expect the sanctions program that has failed for the last 2 years to suddenly become successful now. The basic reasons they failed are still in place. So my prediction, and I don't make predictions often, but here I'm extraordinarily confident. This is a lot of public relations, make the government look like it's doing something, but it isn't able to do it, and it can't face that problem. So we get stories where the Wall Street Journal, which knows exactly what I'm saying to be the case, pretends otherwise and publishes the article as if we're now going to get that success which none of the previous sanctions achieved.
I mean, this reflects something very important and significant, a shift in the world, in the balance of forces, really, in the world economy. Because the capitalists in the United States are used to being in charge, not only ruling over the workers in their own country, but also being the dominant capitalists around the world. You know, the U.S. capitalists make the rules for the world capitalist economy, or at least they used to. But now they're in a situation where, well, if Russia doesn't want to use a bank that's connected to Wall Street, or for that matter, connected to London or Paris or any of the other Western countries that are imposing sanctions. There are banks in the UAE and Turkey and many other countries that are willing to buck that pressure from the Western, you know, really primarily US Wall Street dominated global financial system. I mean, this is a big change from not that long ago, where the United States would really not have that much trouble imposing sort of a uniform position on the global banking system, isn't it?
Yep. It's a part of the decline of the American empire. It's part of the decline of the relative size and footprint of the United States' capitalism relative to the rest of the world. This has been going on slowly but steadily for a long time. But, you know, like the temperature of water drops slowly, 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 and then it hits 32 degrees. And if it drops one more degree, not only is it colder, but it changes its form from liquid water to solid ice. It's the same thing with a country. As it gets smaller and smaller relative to the rest of the world, which the United States did because it was such a dominant economic force coming out of World War II, but as it goes by decade after decade, becoming relatively smaller, eventually you get a qualitative change. Not just it's a bit smaller, but it's no longer the global dominant hegemonic power that it once was. And that's what you're seeing. That's why countries are shifting out of the dollar, using other currencies. That's why you have the enormous power and rise of a competing country, namely the People's Republic of China. And you're seeing it here in the refusal of people to go along with the sanctions. You know, a bank that is doing good business with Russia now gets this sanction. So let me give you an imaginary phone conversation, but it's not very imaginary. The bank in Turkey or wherever, they call up their Russian counterpart. They say, well, we've got to look like we're not making deals with you. So we're going to make a deal with a bank in, I'll pick a country, Colombia in Latin America. And then the Colombian bank will make a deal with a bank in Spain, and the bank in Spain will make a deal with a trader, and they'll all end up with the same money in the hands of the Russians. It just had to go through several steps. Is that an inconvenience? Yes. Will it cost the Russians a bit more money because everybody has to get a little piece of that action as the money is going around? Yes. It's an annoyance. It's an irritation. It costs the Russians. But it's all chump change. It's a little bit. It doesn't basically block Russia from anything in terms of the vast amounts of money that they need to move around the world, which is what has happened, as I said, over the last 2 years. So you're absolutely right. This is another piece of evidence, if you need it, that the power, the role of the United States isn't anymore what it was. And there's more decline coming. Over the last 3 years, just to give you an example, the relative total output of goods and services of the United States and its allies, the so-called G7 in the world, has dropped to about 28-29% of total world output. In contrast, over the last 3 years, the total output of the BRICS countries, China and its allies, has gone from about 30% to about 33%. So the gap is widening and quickly, and the other countries are becoming collectively, because the BRICS include Russia, let's remember, have become collectively much richer and more powerful relative to the United States and its allies. And if you look at Europe, where Germany is in recession, the powerhouse of the European economy, then the United States is in a situation with its allies that are very different from, for example, Russia and China, each of which this year alone, and I by this year I mean either 2023 or 2024, take your pick, is growing much faster than the United States and its allies, which means that the gap is only getting wider. What you have in the United States, and what the audience of this program should think about, is not just the decline of the United States, but there is a massive denial of that decline on the part of most academics, most politicians, and most journalists who keep on writing stories like the one you mentioned in the Wall Street Journal, as if the United States was what it isn't anymore. And that makes the situation worse, because you make big mistakes if you do not understand your own situation. And to give you the obvious example, the war in Ukraine. It was expected that this would be easily a victory for Ukraine. It wasn't. That it would easily involve the failure of the Russians to maintain a war effort. It wasn't. That it would mean Russia would be brought to its knees. The ruble would collapse, as I said, none of which happened. And in fact, if you look at the war right now, the Russians now have taken over about, if I have the numbers right, 20-25% of the territory of Ukraine, some of which they have annexed into Russia. That's where the Russian language and Russian people are the majority anyway. And this is a victory for Russia so far, and again, with no change in sight. So you'd think people were a little more cautious. Let me remind you of what the textbook definition of insane is: doing the same thing and expecting different outcomes. The United States government is doing the same thing, levying sanctions, but expecting these, the ones on the banks that you've asked about, to have a different result from what the other ones did, in fact, not achieve. And that's a sign that something is terribly wrong, and it's the mistaken calculations that come out of a denial of what the reality of the world economy now is.
Professor Wolf, I am looking at an article on Foreign Policy Magazine's website, and it speaks to, I think, a point related to what you're explaining here. The title is "America's Love of Sanctions Will Be Its Downfall." This is from last year. The author writes in this editorial, "In the past two decades, sanctions have become the go-to foreign policy tool of Western governments led by the United States. Now, a growing coalition of autocratic governments is seeking to rewrite the rules of the global financial system, largely in response to the ubiquity of U.S. sanctions. It's time to reconsider how these punitive measures are eroding the very Western order they were meant to preserve." So the Treasury Department imposes sanctions on thousands and thousands of different entities in dozens of countries. It's, you know, viewed as, I think, by sort of the managers of U.S. empire as a politically convenient alternative to open warfare, to an invasion, right? You know, let's just take economic measures against the country, make the economy scream. And by virtue of doing that, impose our political will on a country. But what this person is arguing, and what many people have argued, is that this is accelerating that trend that we're talking about, where those businesses, where those financial institutions, corporations, business people in other countries decide to essentially trade with each other rather than engaging or minimizing their exposure to U.S.-dominated markets and industries. Do you see that changing anytime soon? I mean, can the United States sort of step back, recalibrate, or is this essentially a terminal condition of, like we're saying, an empire in decline?
Well, there's no question in my mind that there's an empire in decline. No particular policy is inevitable, and no particular policy, when it is in effect, will remain always that way. If anything, history teaches that policies and situations come and go and change. So I'm not going to make a prediction about this. I think the biggest thing that is now shaking the world is the observation made everywhere in the world that the United States is in decline. Look, the biggest interventions, picking and choosing what industries succeed and fail, is now the United States itself. It is massively subsidizing semiconductor computer chip production because it can't compete effectively with the People's Republic of China. Oh, it doesn't admit that. That's part of the denial. So we hear all these stories about the national security requires it. I find these ludicrous. Every country in the world suspects that the high-tech folks, the communication folks, can eavesdrop on what they're doing. the major producer of communications equipment, telephones, and so on in the world are American. And so every country in the world is using American-produced technology in its communications, allowing the CIA access, et cetera, et cetera. They've all accepted that they have to live with that. They have to take other measures to keep their secrets secret and so on. Do the Chinese do similar things? I don't know, but I assume probably they do. But the only country screaming bloody murder about national security is the United States and a few of its allies who started doing that after the United States made it. The United States is also interfering in a variety of other industries supporting them. It is levying huge tariffs to keep other industries protected. For example, the Chinese are now the producers of the highest quality, lowest price electric automobiles. They're beginning to invade Europe, where the Europeans cannot compete. And they're thinking of closing themselves off with high tariffs the way the United States does. Europe's tariffs against Chinese cars, 10%. America's tariffs against Chinese cars, 27.5%. I mean, that means for Americans, you have to pay 27.5% more than the Chinese charge for their cars. And you have to pay that to Uncle Sam. So the rest of the world is saying the United States is picking favorites. The United States is helping its own industries at the expense of everybody else. Why shouldn't we do the same? And if they do, that'll hurt American companies who used to be able to sell in all those other countries, but will now be closed out by them the same way the United States is closing out China and other countries, etc. That's the point of that article in Foreign Policy, because they sense that there's a change going on, but because they're part of the denial of the story of the declining empire, they can't explain it the way I've just done. They don't have an explanation. They can just sit there and moan about how this is a change that maybe isn't such a good idea. They're quite right. It is a change. They're quite right. It may not be a good idea. But the United States is now so beleaguered by competitors who outcompete the United States a lot of the time, not always, but a lot of the time, that the United States is deciding to shift over to less of a free trade, open market situation, and more of the government coming in to protect favored industries. And I don't see that changing anytime soon, unless those industries that are hurt. And remember, over the last 40 years, American industries invested a ton of money in China, India, Brazil, to produce more cheaply over there, bring that stuff back to the United States, and so get much higher profits because you could get away with paying the cheaper wages of workers in other parts of the world. Those companies now stand to lose if they can't bring this stuff back in because of tariffs here. If they can't bring that stuff back in because people are closing off their markets to other goods from other countries. They don't want to lose those investments. Those are among the biggest corporations in America. And let me assure everyone listening, they are very busy talking to Trump and Biden, Republican and Democratic leaders, pushing for a change back to the way things were, because they risk losing a lot if things continue the way they are. As usual, the outcome will depend on which of the two groups of business, big businesses, those gaining from the new direction versus those losing from the new direction, which one has the power to donate enough to the politicians to win them over. The rest of us, the mass of us, we're spectators while we pretend that we live in a democratic society.
Well, Professor Wolf, we have just a few minutes left. I want to pick up on one thing in particular you mentioned there, and that's this phrase, national security. That's one of those formulations that politicians like to use in order to trick people into thinking that the interests of capitalists and the interests of workers are the same. It's all, you know, one big nation and we all have the same interests and the same things make us secure. But of course, in reality, what makes a worker secure and what makes a capitalist secure is completely different. Cuba, for example, is one of the countries that's under maybe the most restrictive sanctions regime that the United States government imposes. Cuba has a major biomedical industry, a biopharmaceutical industry that's produced, among other things, a vaccine for lung cancer. People in the United States don't have access to that because of the U.S. sanctions on Cuba, the U.S. blockade of Cuba. You know, the U.S. sanctions on the Russian oil and gas industry has led to a global increase in prices. I mean, at the beginning of the war, a very dramatic spike in prices. That made inflation that workers in the United States feel a lot worse. So, I mean, it's really not something that's in the interest of the working class at all, even though this is presented as being in the national interests of all Americans.
Yeah, it's discriminatory in that way. It always has been. But the irony is that it's not really clear whether this is good for American capitalism at all. In other words, this is a clever way for the politicians in Washington to favor industries that want protection, the automobile industry that can't compete against the Chinese in that area, just as so many other companies have failed to compete with China. That's why most American companies that have invested in production in China did it, because they can't compete. And the rule in capitalism, if you can't compete, join them. So they left and went over to China so they could have the same low wages that would allow them then to compete with the Chinese. And that was the only way to do it. The few that stayed in the United States do so because they have access to cheap labor here. Immigrants, the children of immigrants, and the growing interest in child labor, of teenage labor in this country, which is a horrible byproduct of all of this maneuvering. But you're quite right. The notion of national security is a fig leaf. It's used by governments all over the world to justify cutting back on civil liberties, to cutting back on basic freedoms, to cutting back on you name it. You can justify everything on the notion that there's a scary foreigner out there who's looking to get you, and oh, we have to therefore have national security so we can't provide a lunch for your kid in school, and we can't do this and we can't do that. To believe these politicians when they tell you that, when you really do know better, when you know that politicians tell you what is clever for them to tell you, whereas telling you the truth is something only the rarest among them dare to do.
Well, we're going to have to leave it right there. We've been joined by Professor Richard Wolff. He is the co-founder of the organization Democracy at Work, the author of many books. The latest is The Sickness is the System, When Capitalism Fails to Save Us from Pandemics or Itself. Check out all of his work at rdwolf.com. You've been listening to The Socialist Program. We bring you content several days a week thanks to the support of our patrons at patreon.com/thesocialistprogram. We appreciate all of your support and encourage you to become a patron today if you enjoy listening to the show.
You've been listening to The Socialist Program with Brian Becker, where we bring you news and views about the world for those who want to change it. If you enjoyed the show, subscribe on your favorite podcast app and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and watch video episodes of our in-depth show, The Real Story, every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern on YouTube with our partner, Breakthrough News. We can only continue our work bringing you high-quality news, analysis, and history with the support of our listeners. Connect with us and become a patron at patreon.com/thesocialistprogram and receive an invitation to participate in an exclusive monthly seminar with Brian Becker.